Hello and welcome to Catch the Flavor Youth Radio. I'm Jed Buchanan. All right. And I'm here today with an open door and my friends.
Kaylin.
Okay, that's good. And we're going to talk about the news. So, first news story is the weather. The cold warning is still in effect as of today on Tuesday. The state of Toronto is under an extreme cold weather alert as temperatures have been hovering around minus 15 degrees Celsius today. Earlier today, it was minus 21. At 1 in the afternoon, it was minus 13. Now, as temperatures are getting around that point, that's when they start to have problems and start mentioning things that you can do. You can go and help people who are more susceptible to the cold, such as the elderly and people who you know, such as that. Now, in the event of an extreme cold alert, which is minus 15 degrees Celsius in the city of Toronto, people are advised to know that the 24-hour drop-in centers are open. There's two of them. And the shelters increase in the number of available beds. So you can just direct people there. And the transit tokens are available at drop-ins so that Toronto's homeless can travel to these shelters.
Two homeless men died last week, and there was a vigil held at Trinity Square at the Holy Trinity Church to pay respect to these two deaths. Unfortunately, one died while at a subway stop. Even though there's 24-hour warming centers, there's not much known around why, but the choice was that he wasn't going to go there. And another man was found dead while sleeping in an abandoned truck outside to try to get away from the cold.
The police are continuing their crackdown on illegally parked vehicles. The Blitch, which started in the downtown core last week, is now moving to major streets north of Bloor. Vehicles that are parked along major roads during morning and afternoon rush hours will now be towed at the owner's expense. Drivers are not permitted to park on most major streets from 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. and from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. on weekdays. Drivers who would normally face a $150 parking ticket can now have to pay up to $230 to get their vehicle back. Along with cars being an issue, the Toronto police have also seen a large number of delivery vehicles blocking roadways. Delivery truck drivers now may face up to a $1,000 fee if they park on the street during these periods. The Blitz towed 321 vehicles and issued almost 1,500 parking tickets last week. Delivery companies have begun to change their route times as well as the start times of their employees in an attempt to solve the problem. Now on to an Ontario issue. Ontario Premier Kathleen Wynne has told the province's Ministry of Education to include the subject of consent in their new sexual education curriculum. Education Minister Liz Sandals has been told to include healthy relationships and the topic of consent. The new health and physical education curriculum will aim to address the root causes of gender equality. It aims to start at the very early stages to develop an understanding of healthy relationships and consent for students. Ontario has tried previously to ramp up its sex education policy, but it received negative feedback from parents and religious groups, leading to a reversal by the then Premier Dalton McGuinty. The curriculum hasn't been updated since 1998, long before the rise of social media and smartphones, and the new curriculum will focus on the technology-driven world, and it aims to be finished by the time school starts next fall.
The Toronto District School Board has raised concerns with one of its bus companies after a driver was 2 hours late in dropping kids off at one of its schools. Indeed, a driver new to her route arrived at Forest Hill Public School 2 hours behind schedule, but all the kids were safe and accounted for. It's not the first time this has happened, so many parents are very angry. TDSB spokesperson Ryan Bird said the board's transportation office was looking into the matter after it was reported that, in combination with not having done that route before and the weather, the bus was late, Bird said. And we have brought that concern up with the bus carrier and to make sure it is addressed.
A partially built home in Trinity Bellwoods that was rocked by a fiery explosion late Monday has been the scene of two other as unrelated incidents since the fall of 2012. The latest incident occurred just before midnight, prompting 9 fire trucks and 35 firefighters to respond. The houses were under construction, so nobody was inside when the fire erupted, so there were no injuries. The cause of the fire is not yet known. However, the history is has raised some eyebrows. Indeed, there have now been 3 incidents at this location over the last couple of years, and the first 2 were housing-related. The previous house on the property, a tiny bungalow, went in flames early on September 21, 2030. In the wake of the blaze, a 2-story house was replacing the bungalow. And about a month ago, contractors working at the home discovered 2 homemade explosive devices inside. They found 2 large plastic buckets on upper stair and 1 downstairs. Each bucket was also connected to a timer and plugged into a hole.
Last Saturday, January 10th, a man was involved in an attack with a historical sword. A 66-year-old man was found last Saturday with a slashed arm at church in Carlton in an attack that paramedics have stated involved a samurai sword. No suspects are currently being looked for. If you have any information, the 51st Division phone number is 416-808-5100. And in similar news, on the same day, a man in Owen Sound was arrested after he was reported to have brandished a machete in a downtown restaurant. The Owen Sound police were called at 2 a.m. to the restaurant after patrons stated that a man with a machete was making them feel nervous. The 21-year-old is alleged to have been found with the weapon, a large hunting knife, and a small quantity of drugs by police outside the restaurant. He's being held for a bail hearing.
Charlie Hebdo attack took place at the beginning of January in the satirical Rixi headquarters. This terrible French event talk about 3 person, 3 terrorists, whose dear brother and a young man of 18 years old, who killed 12 persons, including 3 officers police. Well, in the wake of last week's bloody terrorist attacks in Paris, French educators are being urged to improve the teaching of values such as tolerance and free speech in schools. But the job is easier, said Van Dorn. The day after 2 gunmen killed 12 people at satirical magazine Charlie Hebdo in eastern Paris and set off a chain of events that would claim 8 other lives, including their own, French teachers were encouraged to talk about the terrorist aggressive students and discuss holding a minute of silence for the victim. Some professors decided to read the minister's letter out loud to the students.
All right, and that is your news here at Radio Regent. We are going to have a special guest today.
We have Morgan Baskin, who ran for Toronto mayor at 18 years old.
Mm-hmm. So that's coming up. Stay warm, everyone.
Yeah.
Catch the Flavor Youth Radio. I'm Jed Buchanan. And if you want to call in, we have a number. It is 647-344-4134. And our guest has arrived.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. I got the intro. It's all good. Morgan Baskin, who is 18, was contestant. It's not. What's the one?
It's not, unfortunately, a game show. Yeah. I probably would have won if it was a game show.
So good. It was a game show? Like, you have to play the game from Price is Right with the guy going over the hill? No? No one knows that? Fine. It's a great game show. You were a contestant, again. You were running to be mayor. And you did not win. I have a question. How do you first begin to decide? When did you first decide I want to be a candidate for...
I wish I had a killer answer for this. Everyone always asks me, like, when did I decide? When was there a moment? And I wish there was, like, this moment that, like, a lightning bolt hit me and I was like, yes, I'm going to run for mayor and it's going to be amazing. There was no cool moment. I was, like, at a party and someone brought it up, and then over the next 6 months I kept thinking about it and really doing my research, and it was a slow build into something, and I was like, one day I was like, you know what? Maybe I'll actually do this. And 6 months later I signed my papers.
And what do you have to do to be a mayor, like a mayoral candidate?
To be a mayoral candidate?
What's the process? Because lots of people say I'd like to run for...
Yeah, it's actually pretty easy. You have to live here, so you have to have an address here. And then you have to sign some forms and pay your $200.
That's it?
Yep, that's it.
Why didn't we run for mayor?
It's a good question. 65 people did, so...
Okay, but what issues were you trying to get across?
I really focused on kind of young people's issues and more around youth representation in politics.
Okay. And do you feel that you were listened to fairly, or do you think people immediately wrote you off?
I think I definitely got a lot more media coverage because of who I was and because of I was a young person. But I think that it was one of those things where I think I was brought in as a kind of, hey, like, let's look at the kitten. She's 19 and she's running for mayor. But then in the next, as soon as I opened my mouth and started answering questions, people did really start to take me seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a point that where they were kind of just focusing on your age instead of your merit?
Oh, 100%. The whole election was like that in lots of ways. I think that unfortunately, you know, being really young, that becomes a focus. You know, it's like watching cat videos online. People find it really interesting and they freak out about how young you are and how interesting that part is. And it takes a while to get people to pay attention to everything else that you have to say.
Now, how has things changed since then?
Well, I work a lot shorter hours, and I'm a lot less stressed out these days. I said on Twitter the other day that it's a lot easier to be 19 when you're not actually also running for mayor, and that's very true. Being 19 and running for mayor were not the two easiest lifestyle choices to mesh together. But mostly, you know, I've gone back to what I was doing before the election, though I'm not in high school, I guess I'm... working and kind of chilling out and being 19 again, hanging out with my friends, all those kind of regular boring things, watching too much television.
But you obviously have a passion for politics. So do you plan on continue to pursue a career, a political career?
I'm pretty on the fence about that. I think that it's really important to me that political careers are pursued for the right reasons. I want to be in politics because I feel strongly about either an election or feel strongly about a set of issues, or I feel strongly about, you know, youth representation or any of those things, and I feel that that particular election is the best way for me to move those issues forward. But there are lots of other ways to do that. You know, this time I ran for mayor, and that was one way to bring a lot of attention to young people, especially in this election. I really, you know, young people and youth unemployment really became an election issue. But in another election, that might not be possible. You know, I won't be 19 forever. That won't always have the same cachet. And, you know, there may be other ways to move that forward in terms of, you know, more run-of-the-mill advocacy or through social media campaigns or, you know, really any other way to move those issues forward. I'm more interested in really focusing on young people and young people's issues while I'm young than necessarily focusing on politics, if that makes sense.
Just to backtrack a little bit, what did you learn from campaigning from mayor about politics?
I think the better question is what I didn't learn. I learned a lot about professional interactions. I learned a lot about Toronto media. I learned a lot about how stressful it is to live under a microscope. No matter how small the group of people paying attention, to have a lot of people paying attention to you is really stressful. I don't know. I learned that John Tory and I have similar taste in ties. I think that, you know, it really, like, I learned a lot about all sorts of things, about politics, about administrative work, about, you know, I ran my own campaign, and, you know, I was my campaign manager in lots of ways. I was also the candidate. I was also, you know, fielding all my own email and Twitter and all of those things for the most part as well. So it was a crash course in all sorts of things.
Did you have donors or anything like a campaign team or anything, or did you do it all yourself?
I definitely had donors. I ran my campaign on about $4,000, which works. Oh, was it $4,000? $2,000? I can't remember now.
Typical politician doesn't know what she spent.
I know. It's terrible because I did all my own financials too, so I could really know. I think it's four grand. That's awful. It's been a little while since I was looking at those numbers. And I had a campaign team, and my family was, I mean, indispensable to me as well as my friends in terms of both keeping me sane and also, you know, driving me around to drop off signs. If you had a sign outside your house, chances are I put it up. And, you know, all of those pieces, dropping off, my family did an immense amount of work, and friends, and, you know, also volunteers that I didn't know before the election did an immense amount of work, you know, dropping off flyers and all of those people's. All of those pieces of a campaign that you can't do with one set of hands.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. You mentioned John Tory earlier. How do you feel about him and what he's going to do for the city?
I think I'm still, I would, the term someone used the other day was dubiously optimistic, and that's how I feel. I really like John Tory as a person. He was incredibly kind to me and incredibly supportive of me as a candidate, but also of young people in general in politics, and I think that that's really important to me in a politician, and that makes me feel good about him as the next mayor of Toronto, the current mayor of Toronto. And I, you know, I've been really impressed. I was very impressed by his response to the two homeless deaths last week. And I think that was incredibly important for him to open the warming centers and to move towards those programs without waiting for the call from public health was an admirable decision and the right one. And so I think that we're moving in the right direction. I think that good things are happening, and I haven't seen anything yet that I really dislike or feel negative towards. But we're also, like, 3 months in. So, you know, there's not been a lot to mess up yet. And so I think that it really will be about time. This far into Rob Ford's, term, we were all still like, I don't know about this guy. And that's kind of how I feel about John Tory. You know, really the next year or so will tell us what the next 4 years are going to look like.
So when you were campaigning, did you meet Rob Ford or interact with him in any way? And if so, what was he like?
When I was campaigning, I didn't meet Rob Ford. I met Rob Ford before I was campaigning, but not during the campaign because he was away for so much of the beginning, and then he was back, and then he was ill, and so he didn't really attend a lot of things.
Right.
But I volunteered in City Hall before the election, and I met him then. But I did meet Doug Ford. I sat next to him in that memorable Arts Vote debate. That was interesting. And I think that, you know, like many things, both of them are much less scary in person than they are on television. And, you know, they're really just people. They're people who have, you know, dubious political views and who make a lot of choices I don't agree with. But they're still just people, you know. They make John Tory, Doug Ford, me, and Ari Goldkind made a whole bunch of jokes about ties before the Arts Vote debate, right? And Doug Ford was incredibly supportive of my campaign, which is, you know, that doesn't seem like a thing he would do, but that was what happened, right? So
it's fabulous.
Now, when you do something like this, in the back of your mind, you're probably not thinking you're going to win. So, were you trying to build momentum for something else? What was your benchmark for success or completing what you wanted to accomplish?
That's complicated because it was, you know, 8 months is a long time. But I think that one of the things was definitely when I started the campaign, I didn't think anyone was going to pay attention. So my benchmark for success was zero. I hope someone who's not my mom votes for me was basically where it started. But as time went on and there was more, you know, I didn't have a grand plan. It wasn't about building momentum for my own personal career or building momentum for, you know, a youth movement I was going to start or anything. I think that looking at that makes too big of a deal about my campaign and forgets the context around my campaign. And I think that the context is really important. You know, millennials are a generation in flux right now. We're going through a lot of transition, and I think that means that there's a larger youth movement that my campaign was a part of, but my campaign it's not the beginning of anything and it's not the end of anything. It's just part of a bigger thing that's happening in our generation as we try and figure out who we are and what we want in the world. And I think that that's really important to consider. But, you know, really, as my campaign went on, all I wanted was for more young people to vote in this election. Whether it was for me or for anyone else, I wanted more young people to vote in this election. And, you know, as a benchmark for success, that wasn't bad. I mean, I ended with in eighth place with 1,009 votes, and that was really – that was mind-blowing to me. You know, that was more than any success I'd ever imagined. You know, that was not just someone other than my mom voting for me. That was, like, someone other than my whole extended family and my whole extended friends voting for me in, like – to the tune of like 700 people, right? Like, that's crazy. That's a lot of people to trust someone who was really 19 and had no experience in politics with their city. And I think that was really important. And that was it sent a pretty big message, I think, in terms of hope and optimism for this city.
Are you involved politically right now with any causes or anything like that?
Nope, not a single one. I don't have a membership to a political party. I am not working on anyone's campaign. Unless you count being really annoying about politics things on Twitter, no.
It's really easy to become a member of a party. It's only like $10 and you can cancel.
The Liberal Party's free now. You can just join.
Really?
Yeah.
That's one out then. For like $20, you can decide the fate of every political party ever.
Except that you can't be members to more than one political party at once.
Oh, I know, but you have to cancel and move. It's like a whole strategy. I worked it out once.
Party often.
It's a very boring party.
No, just you elect every person you want in whichever role you want, so the best four people fight out if you can. Excluding the one who's in charge, so it's automatically going to be like $20 every time. What was it? Oh, did you ever have terrible nightmare dreams where you had won and you didn't know what to do?
Yes.
And you were like, oh, I'm mayor, and then you woke up and you're like, oh.
I definitely, most of my nightmares were not like that. I had a contingency plan. Like, I'd written out, like, what I was going to do if I won. And it was actually a really panicky thing for me during the election because I was like, to run for a political position and put any kind of effort into it, you have to be delusional enough to believe that to have a little part of you believe that you're going to win. Like, you have to be that delusional. But if you're that delusional, you also then have to deal with the possibility that you might win. And you could be 19 years old with no university degree and no experience in politics, being like, hey, so I'm now in charge of the largest city in the country. But I also, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge that there are 44 city councilors as well as the mayor. And there's a whole structure of bureaucracy and city managers all around the mayor. And that was always what kept those nightmares at bay as much as possible in terms of there are all sorts of people who do a lot of work around the city, and we actually build up the mayors if they do a lot of stuff. And, I mean, the mayor does things, but a lot less than we imagine.
So what would you have done? Well, okay. Why wouldn't you then run for city councilor or some other smaller point in
I didn't run for city councilor because I live in this ward and I was not going to be Pam McConnell. You could be at Iron Man and you wouldn't be Pam McConnell in this ward. Like, that's just not going to happen. Until she leaves, she's got it. Also, I don't want to be a school trustee. I spent the last 15 years of my life in the school system, and I'm not about to spend more time of my life in the school system right now. Thank you very much. But I also, I didn't want those positions. And I think that it's incredibly important in politics that you run for positions, not because you win them, not because you can win them, but because you want them. And that's what I did. And, you know, people are like, oh, you're being cocky or all of these things. It's like, no, like, I didn't want to talk about issues in this ward. I didn't want to talk about school board issues. And not because they're not important. I just wanted to talk about them on a grander scale in terms of what was happening in a whole city and what do we talk about as the city as a whole. And so I ran for the position that would have allowed me to do that because I'd rather lose running for something that I want than win a position that I'm going to be bad at because I don't want it.
Mm-hmm. Will you run for mayor again, do you think?
I have no idea.
I have no idea.
What would have to happen for you to run for mayor again?
I don't know.
Okay.
I've done no thinking about it because it's stressful, and currently I have better things to do with my time, like watch Scandal. So at some point I will think about it. At some point I'm sure you know, an opportunity will arise where I will you know, think about, do I want to do this again or do I not want to do this again? But I haven't thought about it right now.
Do you think that your campaign brought more light to the needs of the youth around the city?
To the needs of young people, I think that's pretty debatable. I think it definitely made youth unemployment a campaign issue, and I think that was really important. But it's one of those things that's a little, it's kind of up in the air. I really do think my campaign brought light to brought young people's issues to the forefront of the election, but I also, you know, I think a lot more needed to be talked about in terms of the needs of young people, especially in low-income neighborhoods in this city.
All right. We got time for like one question.
Okay. What are, do you think, specifically are the needs of youth right now?
How long do we have? I could go on for like 45 minutes about this. I think the biggest things are giving opportunities for young people to help themselves. Often when we talk about helping young people, we get into this like really weird vibe where we act like the two options are ignoring them and yelling at them to like do better and take care of themselves and handing them jobs. And I think that like we need to be aware that there's this middle ground where we're providing young people with opportunity to educate ourselves, opportunity to find work, opportunity to find fulfillment, opportunity to be creative, and all of those pieces. And that's the most important, is providing opportunity, because there's lots of places in this city where we're not providing opportunity to young people.
All right. We'll leave you today with Alex Cooper's I'm 18.
I'm Stephanie.
I'm Kaylin.
I'm Tifei.
Taking over the role of Silent Mike is Tifei. Silent Mike is gone for the next six months, being as silent as he could possibly be.
Damn it, Mike.
He's so good at it. He's left. And thanks to our guest.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'm Judd, and we are out of here.